It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 301. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. And there was a special press release that came out this morning by Raw Voice. And Raw Voice owns the techpodcast.com network that I'm a member of and also the Blueberry Network. And that's Blueberry, spelled without the E's, .com. And they're two great networks that the one Tech Podcast Network I've been part of almost the entire time I've been podcasting, which is for 5 years. They released, Raw Voice, an application, a free app for Boxy and Roku, two devices that enhance your TV, connects your TV to the internet and bridges that and allows you to bring video in from the internet and stream it right to your television. I have an Apple TV myself. Well, there's now a Tech Podcast Network app for these devices, and there's going to be more devices that this app is going to be moved to. So anybody that you know that has these devices, or if you're new and you've found the Mike Tech Show because of that, welcome. This is going to open the podcasts from the Tech Podcast Network and the video cast to a much greater audience. And that brings up video, where everybody wants tech video. And, you know, you got great channels already like Revision 3 and the Twit Network, where you got lots of good video content that you can stream. And there's more out there. Well, with the Tech Podcast Network having a video with some of the video cast, I have to take it to that next step, to the next level, and I am going to look into what it will take where I can start to record, not just relying on Ustream for my recording, but also recording to video and then posting that up. So look for that. It's definitely going to require some planning, and I want to do it right. You know, that's going to definitely take some time. And with my consulting schedule, it's going to be very hard to work this in. So we're going to try. I mean, that's one of the things that's why there has not been a Tech Vets. It's not been Carrie's fault. It's been my fault. My schedule is just so jam-packed with clients and work, which is a good thing. That has to come before podcasting. So one thing, I always plan my schedule in freeing up Thursday nights so I can do the Mike Tech Show. It's hard to get other nights free. That's a big announcement for this app, and spread the word. And anybody you know that's got Boxy or has a Roku device, you know, it's a free application where you have a listing of all of the great tech podcast content from the Tech Podcast Network. And hopefully you'll be subscribing to my show. And if you're listening to the Mike Tech Show, hey, send me an email and let me know that you're listening on Boxy or Roku. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or letting me know, you know, how you're listening and any questions that you have, because that's what makes this show so great. I build in and bring the content from you, the listener, and mold the shows on my experience and problems that I run into and solutions from consulting. And the whole show, the whole Mike Tech Show, is about tips and tricks that will make you more productive at home and work. Also, your questions. So my email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. And you can leave me voicemail message, and I incorporate that into the show. The voicemail hotline, 240-949-2450. That's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Let's take care of business, and then I'm going to get into the right into the show where I have lots of things to talk about my consulting problems and solutions that I've ran into over the last couple of weeks that I haven't had a chance to discuss with you. So I know you're going to be interested, especially with some of the links that I have for tonight's show and some of the information based on the problems that I'm going to be talking about. I think you're going to really like it. In this ongoing challenging economy, companies of all sizes, they must find new ways to cut costs. Every dollar saved helps the bottom line. That's why you got to look to GoToMeeting, because it is the best web conferencing solution for your business. It helps improve overall business communications and effectiveness, not to mention improving the global economy. The easiest, most affordable way for you to hold a meeting is GoToMeeting, brought to you by Citrix. You can reduce time on the road by presenting, training, demonstrating online. It's easy to present. It's one click to connect. It's one flat price per month for unlimited meetings. I have used GoToMeeting and it's great. Right now, you can get 30 days free trial for GoToMeeting by going to GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's a month of unlimited online free meetings at GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. I got a couple more announcements before we get to the content, so forgive me. Mark this down. The post show for April 22nd live, that Thursday night show, my friend Dave the Rave will be back spinning music, and he hosts a great internet radio show called Relics and Rarities. He's a lot of fun. I've known Dave for a long time, and if you can't watch it live, don't worry. I will record that separately on Ustream. So you'll have the regular podcast that I'll record. I'll stop. And then when we get started with the post show with Dave in the house, I will start a second recording. And it's a lot of fun. I can't wait. It's been a while since we've gotten together. So I'm looking forward to it. And then that same week, if you are in the area, I will be presenting at the Trenton Computer Festival on Saturday morning, April 24th, on how to improve performance of your PC, regardless of the operating system, whether it's XP, Vista, Windows 7, and how to do it for free using utilities that I've talked about here on the show or I've talked about on Tech Vets, and I'm going to demonstrate it. There's a lot of people out there who have no idea that these utilities exist. You do because you're listening to this show. And therefore, you're in the know and you have learned about these great utilities to improve your computer. I talk about tips like that all the time on this show. Well, this is a chance for me to talk about those same tips and present them to lots of people who will be attending the Trenton Computer Festival. And I'm happy to present again. And that's at Trenton State College. And hopefully you'll come by if you're in the area and you hear this, and come by and say hello. The first story for tonight is my attempt to add SSL to a client's website for their remote access and their email. Now, the website is hosted internally. Now, this is not their main website for the company. It's their website that is for Small Business Server 2003, so they can remotely access their desktops. They can get email, Outlook, web access. Well, to add SSL, it's not a difficult process. You go into the IIS manager on the server and you request a certificate, an SSL certificate. Now, this is for compliance, for making sure that their email is encrypted as it's being sent, making sure that their connection when they're accessing their remote desktops are encrypted. Well, SSL, you can buy that certificate from GoDaddy. And I asked my client to purchase a certificate from GoDaddy, and then I would take it from there. Here's where we're at. They logged in and made the request for GoDaddy. It's like $29 for the certificate. And if you Google, you can even find some coupons and use my codes and save money. Once you request the certificate, it's basically an SSL certificate is to guarantee that you are who you are. So that if I go to a site and there's and I type HTTPS, or in the process of being at the site, it goes to HTTPS. That means that it is secure and that they are who they say they are. Okay. So you basically have to prove that when I want this certificate, if I say I'm MikeTechShow.com, I got to prove that. Now, the only way to prove that is they will send the request once you purchase the certificate. They send the request to the automatically to the admin account of the domain of that record. So this is something that you cannot, it's already there. You cannot change. I mean, you can change if you own the domain, but they will automatically send it. Well, my client, I didn't realize, has their domain, has all that information private. So GoDaddy sends an email after I request a certificate from the server. I cut and paste it into the GoDaddy request. GoDaddy sends an email saying, well, since your domain, that information is private, we can't send you an email. What you have to do is take this code and add a CNAME record to your DNS of the domain. And that means only someone who owns that domain could do that. So my client has their domain name hosted with Network Solutions. That's where they purchased it. So I go on to their account to Network Solutions to create the CNAME record. Well, guess what? I'm not allowed to do that because their DNS is hosted by another company, because that's where the main website, the public-facing website, is being hosted by another company, and I can't make the CNAME record. My client can't create that CNAME record. We now have to beg this hosting company to make that change. And this is all so I can just take this SSL certificate and add it back to the server into the IIS manager so we can get an HTTPS when they're connecting. And we can comply with one aspect of the security compliance. It is unbelievable what you have to go through. And I wanted to let you know, if you're ever in my shoes and you are going through this process, that yes, it's nice to have your domain private, but this is one of those cases where, you know what? It helps to not have it private. Keep in mind all these things when you're going after an SSL certificate. And that's why I wanted to share it with you, because it's just been driving me crazy. And you end up spending a lot of time. And Winston knows this because he has been guiding me along the way a little bit here, as I have asked him, because I am not up to speed with the SSL certificate. So Winston was telling me, you know, hey, this is how I, you know, how you do it in IIS. This is, you know, what you do. And then I was able to take it from there. But then look at the roadblocks I've ran into. Even in the pre-show, Winston in the chat said, hey, how did it go with the SSL certificate? I said, well, I'm saving that for the show. Wait until I talk about it, and then you'll understand. Well, now I have the same client, something else that has been just driving me crazy, that they've requested something very simple, and I should have been able to do it right away. But again, it was one of those things that I kept running into a situation and hitting a brick wall and not knowing what happened. And up until late last night, I was going to be posing this question to all of you for a solution, but I was able to solve it. So let me tell you what this is. Since we have Small Business Server 2003, they have Exchange 2003, and they want to implement an email retention policy, but a limited one. You know, 180 days for the inbox, anything older than that, to be deleted. Sent items and deleted items. They want 90 days for deleted items and sent items. But that's it. You know, not much more. I went Googling to find what's the easiest way to do this. And there's lots of instructions out there. There's great knowledge base articles from Microsoft. And I followed them to the letter, where you go into the Exchange Server Manager and you go into the recipient's policy. And in there, it's very easy to just make the setting changes. You click OK. Then you have to schedule that mailbox maintenance to work. So I scheduled it to be once a week and to send a report. So there's a couple settings that you can go through, and they're very simple steps. But all the instructions forgot to mention one major step, because when I finished all these settings, there's a way to manually kick off the mailbox maintenance. And every time I kicked it off, I immediately would get my administrative email that would tell me zero mailboxes processed. Now, there's only 21 mailboxes on this server, so it's not a very big company, but I would always get zero. And I stopped and started the information store, all the exchange services. I went through all of the typical things that you would do with an exchange server to make this work, and I couldn't get it. Well, there's an option when you're starting this policy. It's the first tab, and it's for filters. But when I read filter, I think, well, I'm filtering for things that are not going to apply to the policy. I didn't realize that you have to set the filter for what mailboxes are going to be processed. And I found only one mention in an article from several pages of links from Google, where it finally said it was actually a description on how to filter out and prevent executive boxes, like maybe certain people who are executives who can be exempt from this email retention policy. And I looked at that and I said, you know what? I'm going to follow this process, even though I'm not excluding anyone, and I want to see what happens. Well, I find out that if you go through this and you click OK, it actually runs a quick report to tell you how many mailboxes are going to be processed. And I finally unchecked everything and I said, give me everybody on the Exchange server. Bang, I got 21 listed. And then it was like, okay. And then there was an option, would you like to apply this policy now? And I was like, oh, yes. Now I go back and I manually start the mailbox process. It kicks off. I get an email, about a half hour later, saying that it completed. It deleted almost 4 gigs of email from the 21 users, and it deleted, you know, thousands and thousands of messages, and it's great. But remember, before you do any of this, that you warn your users, or you're going to end up restoring from tape or disk or wherever your backup process is. Make sure they are ready. And so what I do, I have this scheduled right after my full backup for the week, over the weekend. So after the full backup, then the maintenance, because I know there will be a time where some important messages are cleaned up because of this policy, and I'm going to be asked to have to restore them. And I want to be able to quickly go right back to that backup right before they were deleted, and I would be able to easily retrieve it for them. Just make sure that when you have a policy, you write it out, or you have your client write out the details, because you want a policy that what you state, you do what you say. Because for any kind of compliance, that's the big thing that they're looking for, that you are following what you state. And once you do that, and once you notify all the users that it's coming, and you give them options on how to archive their mail messages before you go in and clean them up. Make sure you have a process for them. Take all of this into consideration. I did, and I outlined all of that with my client. But the last couple weeks, I've been remoting in trying to get this to work. And last night, I finally got it to work. So I was very happy. And I'm going to have a link to the article that I read that kind of put me on the right path for the solution. Matter of fact, everything I talk about tonight, there, I got some really great links. So don't forget to go back to, after you're listening to this, to the show notes at miketechshow.com. So you can get all these great links. Now, that's one client. How about my main client? How would you like this? All of a sudden, people calling in, and all of a sudden, the help desk, their phones are lighting up. They're being disconnected from email, connecting to the internet, and then they're back up. One of the problems is, of course, the president of the company, whose connection keeps going up and down. And I'm actually in his office at his notebook watching it happen. And I'm watching the connection drop, him being dropped from connecting to the Exchange server. It's driving us crazy. All of a sudden, I said, you know what? I'm going to take a look at the switches that some of these people are connecting to. They're Juniper switches, and they're in the closets. And I log on to one of the switches, and I see its uptime as being 7 minutes. I look at another switch and I see its uptime being 168 days. I go to another switch and I see its uptime 10 minutes. We have two switches that are spontaneously rebooting. Anybody connected to that switch, they lose their connection. Having a conversation with Winston on the phone, and I said, you know, you wouldn't believe what I'm going through today. I have a Juniper switches and I have a problem. And he says, are they spontaneously rebooting? And I just froze. And he told me of a known issue where if you are multicasting and you have certain UDP packets that are of a certain size, that the firmware on the Juniper switches, they have trouble handling this. Now, the problem I had is we have several more Juniper switches that are of the same firmware, and they are not rebooting, and they were susceptible to those same packets. So I still don't understand why it was these two particular switches. So we spent time on the phone with Juniper and had one of the engineers get the updated firmware. They put the firmware on, and all was well. This weekend, the remaining switches that we're not rebooting, but we're of this firmware that has a problem, they're getting the firmware updated. And then there's two more switches I have to wait till Tuesday night that I'm going to do on Tuesday night next week as part of another project for the client. So just beware of, no matter what the equipment is, you know, make sure you're talking to the manufacturer and tech support, and understand that it's possible that you could have bad firmware. Now, why would these switches work for 5 months and not reboot? And why only these two switches out of 10 switches that have the same firmware version and they're all the same model? So I'm still puzzled by exactly what happened, and I'm putting the screws back to the value-added reseller and Juniper themselves, because I want them to come up with a root cause and explain it well enough for me and my client so we can be happy with going forward with this. So anyway, just some of my struggles. This was last week that I wanted to share with you, and some of the problems. Now, an interesting challenge. I have a new client. They need to add a new firewall to the organization because they're currently, their network is being protected by a host company that they are contained within that network, and they need to be separated. So we have to get them their own firewall. They need a VPN connection, and they have a Windows 2003 small business server. So something that I have been exploring is installing ISA. It is something I have never installed, and I'm going to be going through that because ISA acts like a RADIUS server for authentication on their domain controller. And you connect that to a device that is looking for a RADIUS server, which is going to be this new firewall. The firewall will then talk to the server and get authentication so we can set up a VPN connection. That is something that I'm working on, and I have some links that I'm going to share that I'm actually going to be following for taking up this work and doing this next week for my client. So that's something else. Another thing that I'm working on is Active Directory domain controllers. I have a client that has 4 Active Directory domain controllers, and I found out that they are operating at a Windows 2000 Active Directory level. The 2 main Active Directory servers are Windows 2008. So why? Why is this happening? There are one of them is actually turned off, I found, when I looked at one of the domain controllers. The other one should not even be a domain controller, that server. Oh, you don't even want to know about that one. 2 of the main control, the domain controllers are virtual and actually caused a problem a few weeks ago when there was an issue with the NetApp storage device and both domain controllers were unavailable. And we came to the realization that, you know, in a large server environment, and especially a virtual environment, you should have at least one physical server that is a domain controller. One of the things I wanted to make sure, I've just built out the 3rd domain controller that's physical. Then we're going to have 2 that are virtual. I'm now going through the process of researching to make sure that the 2 older servers, that we eliminate them. Once we eliminate those servers, I will be able to elevate the domain once we get rid of the old servers and that cleanup. I have 2 links that I'm going to be sharing with you on the cleanup process and how to properly remove domains and domain controllers. So I think that would be interesting reading for those who are interested in this. And it's something that I want to be very careful before I approach this, so this way I don't cause any harm or any damage. I have a question that I need some help with from a client, and then I'm going to get into an important email. I'm going to help someone with that email. Here's the question I received from my client, and I need some advice. And I just received this, and I haven't had a time to look into it. When I access my system at the office and she uses the remote desktop connection of Small Business Server and I'm away for a few days, it seems that all of the system's resources, they build up and it shuts down the computer. And the only way for me to remotely connect is to have the computer restarted. Is this a memory issue or is it just an old computer issue? It's a challenge when I travel, as we aren't supposed to share passwords with people and I can't get into the system, and then someone else needs to help me out. So I have a system that after a few days, and only when she's using the computer remotely, the system will shut down and freeze. It'll just, you know, or the only way she can connect back in is to reboot. Now, something I have not checked is the event logs. So I'm going to take my own advice and I'm going to make sure, is it a memory problem? So I need to run memtest 86. I will make sure that the hard drive isn't failing. So I haven't run Crystal Disk Info. I will do that. I will check the event logs. Now, given that, I got to make sure that there, here we go. Winston says, Windows update. There is an update for a memory leak on RDP. Can you send me that information? Thank you. There we go. That might be it, because it seems that it's definitely surrounded around RDP. And if that's the case, I got to make sure that that's applied. So, do they have a fix, or is an update I got to remove? The chat seems to think that there absolutely was a fix, but it's an optional fix. Now, the consensus seems to be that it was part of Service Pack 3. I absolutely know for a fact that Service Pack 3 has been applied to this system, but not all of the optional updates have been applied. So what I'm going to do is get the right knowledge base article, check which update, and make sure that that particular update was applied for a memory leak in RDP. If the fix is that easy, my client's going to be very, very happy. On to this email. The listener asked me to not read his name. I'm a software developer, but I'm looking for a career change into IT or IT security. What advice would you have to help me stand above the crowd and make the transition? Do you think it is a wise move? What certifications, if any, would you recommend? I want to show potential employers I'm serious about a change, and a cert or two might reinforce that fact. Would you hire a former software developer? Why or why not? Thanks. If you're a software developer, then there's a certain logic and process that you go through in the development process. And I think that shows, hopefully, your attention to detail, your thoroughness, and the process that you take. Now, when you're developing software, you have to construct a resume that will convince an employer to take a chance on interviewing you. You're going to need a security certification or two. Now, I'm not a security expert. There's lots of things you can Google for what certifications you should have. You should take a look at, since you're looking at IT security, some of the things that you can do at home for security on a network, and making sure that you have listed that out and that you are doing these things on your own, that you have, you're not only just making that transition, but you're showing that extra drive and passion and dedication to making the career change. You have a very big challenge in front of you. First off, you ask, do you think it is a wise move? Only you can answer that. And it's all based on your passion. If you're hungry for it and you want it and you have the desire, then you must do everything it takes to learn everything you can about IT security and the particular field that you want to enter. If you do that, you now have to get that transferred onto a piece of paper. And it's very, very difficult. I believe once you get in the door, it's going to be easy for you to get the job because you're going to show your desire and your passion for this career change. What's going to be hard is someone seeing all the software development in your past, and now all of a sudden you want to do IT security. You're going to need someone to sell you, but this makes it even doubly hard in this economy. Headhunters are hurting because there are so many people unemployed and looking for jobs that nobody is paying the headhunter fees anymore. I mean, they're not. It's too easy to find good talent. So now that takes away one of the avenues that you would have, which is convincing someone to sell you to get into the door for the interview. Because once I think you're one-on-one, it's a lot easier to demonstrate your passion for making a career change. How do you communicate that passion onto paper? And that is the difficult challenge. And that is something I don't have an exact answer for you. You're going to have to feel it out and see what the response is to your resume. I offer this when you're ready, and some people have already sent me their resumes, and I haven't gotten back to you because I have not had time to look at them, and I intend to catch up this weekend. When you are ready and you make the plunge and your resume is ready, send it to me, and I will see if it reads that way. And I'll try to make some recommendations on what you can do to maybe spice it up a little. So someone can, from reading your resume, they have to be able to take away, wow, this is someone who made a career change and they're pretty serious. It's very, very hard to communicate that on paper. You're really going to need someone to help you do that, to get it onto paper. The words are very hard, where I know, at least for me, my passion's going to come across in the interview. Clearly, after you meet me, you know my passion for networking and what I represent in the computer field, and trying to, maybe it's to sell you on a contract for becoming a retainer client of mine. When I'm done with you one-on-one, you're signing on the dotted line at the end. Because not that I bully you, I'm just that passionate that when I talk about from what I know, and I also clearly mention, if I don't know it, I will tell you. But you know what? I'm going to find out. I'm going to find out how to do it. My client asked me how to do something, a great example, another thing that I need help on. How can we encrypt DVDs inexpensively so the DVD, the data on it, will be encrypted, so when they send it out to one of their customers, they'll be prompted for a password and then get the data? I've been looking at all kinds of products. I don't have an answer. When they asked me that, I said, I will find an option for you and we will test it out and we will try it. I don't have the answer for everything. One of the things that I want to make sure is that you don't do any false advertising. So when you're one-on-one or even in your resume, be truthful. Be honest, because it's going to come out if you don't know it. There's no sense in getting in the door and then getting a job and then finding out that you can't do it. The worst thing would be is to be let go or have something happen. So what you want to make sure is you know what you know, you communicate what you know, and that, hey, if you don't know it, I'm going to find out and we're going to make the best, I'm going to make the best recommendation that I can on collecting all the information. You know I don't know everything. That's why I bring a lot of questions to the podcast for you to help me with in answering. Well, I'm looking for ideas for this particular listener who's making a career change. And I think the big issue is, how do we convey what that passion into the resume? Are there any links out there or websites that, I don't know, can give us some of the words that will help convey that? I don't think so. I don't know. It's just one of those things that's going to come with, just trying to do it and to get it out there. I think the best thing is going to be convincing someone that's going to recommend you. And it's going to be that verbal recommendation that's going to go further than anything you can put on a piece of paper. And you basically need that agent, that person selling you, that will say, this guy, he's made a change, career change. He knows his stuff. He is good. And he loves what he's doing. And that gets you in the door. And so the resume is almost not even looked at that point. It's just one-on-one. And then you take it from there. I hope this helps. I know it's not the ultimate answer for you. So he just sent me this yesterday, and I replied back saying, I'd like to discuss it on tomorrow night's show. can I do that and not mention your name? And he said, absolutely, thank you. So let's hope that this works out. And please, you know, follow up with me on your career change and what you're doing, how you're approaching this. And, you know, tell me what certificates you're going to be going for. And as a matter of fact, that's something we can help them with. What security certifications should someone be going through? If you have been through this for certifications with security, here you go, CISSP. You know, I've seen that. That's something that a Microsoft small business specialist in the chat recommends. So definitely check out CISSP and then ISC2. That's another one that's coming from Winston in the chat. See, that's why the chat's so great. And you can benefit. There's just so many talented people that listen and follow the show. And I thank you so much for helping me out here. It's great. And CISSP is the Certified Information System Security Professional. And it requires one exam, 250 questions, 6 hours. Oh, my. Oh, my. do well on that and be able to put those letters on your resume. And you know what? That certainly communicates your desire for that field. That's for sure. All right. Well, boy, we need a little break here. So how about some independent music that was just sent to me before the show? And his name is Matt Sturm. And the song, and we got a long one here. This is over 6 minutes. The song is Atlantic. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Since this girl in ribbons waits by the shore, spending hours and hours away from the people she'd like to remember, but it doesn't matter, it's always the same. So here's to the change, least the scenery isn't the same. Up the street, past Commerce and Broadway, crosses the bridge over Ewing, then forth. She knows all the people, but no, think she's crazy, but it doesn't matter, she's heard it before. She looks to the sky, and she swears that she won't live the lie. And she looks at the skyline and asks herself how she got into this. Oh, Atlantic, someplace I've never been. Always wanted to go, go to start over. Wasted away in the small town where she thought the people she loved would have been more supportive. Pipe dreams they told her were all that she'd made. And I'd rather die than stay. Believe it. always wanted to go to the start over again.
The song Atlantic. His website is MatthewSTURM.com. Check him out. Check out his music. I want to thank everybody, not just for listening and downloading the show and following the show and hanging out in the chat with me, but you're using my Amazon link. Thank you so much, and please continue to do that. I really appreciate. I'm going to talk about next week. I ordered something that is going to help me out here on my network and in my home office that I bought from Amazon using the proceeds from that, that is really going to help me out. And I will talk about that next week. Thank you for also, hey, helping out Steve Cherubino and me by using the links that I have for his great tutorials on how to repair laptops, and also how to build your tech website, your tech repair website. If that's what you're interested in, he has great tutorials on how to do that. And it's inexpensive. And even for the laptop repairs, you use the code MTS, you're going to save an additional 10%. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That's it. Bye-bye. I'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.